Okay, our next presenter is Ashley Peterson, and she will be talking about the real-time monitoring of deaths using coroner's data.
Start the timer, yes. Hi, good morning, everybody. Good morning. There's some of you alive out there. I'm about to talk about dead people, so I'm going to try to keep it lively in here. I'd like to present to you on real-time monitoring of deaths using coroner's data. I have no financial relationships to disclose. However, we were talking earlier that we wished we did. So this project is a surveillance project funded through the Centers for Disease Control Bioterrorism Preparedness and Response Cooperative Agreement. The project is a collaboration between our Department of Public Health and the Department of the Coroner, and it's intended to provide, a method for the early detection of unusual deaths due to a possible bioterrorist attack or emerging infectious disease. We've also found out, however, that this surveillance system is quite useful in the follow-up and reporting of infectious disease-related deaths. Today, I'd like to describe to you the unusual death surveillance system, including the collaboration between our departments, the resources required to maintain this level of surveillance, and the scope of deaths surveyed. First, I'll tell you what makes a death a coroner's case in California. It's defined in the California Government Code and includes 14 separate situations listed here and on the next slide. They include therapeutic misadventures, self-induced or criminal abortions, drug addiction-related or overdose deaths, deaths due to aspiration, deaths while in custody or under sentence, deaths from an occupation-associated disease or hazard, deaths while in a state hospital, deaths due to criminal acts of others, deaths involving rape or sodomy, any unattended fetal deaths, and any human remains found outside a dedicated cemetery. For our purpose of identifying unusual deaths, the final three definitions are the most important and are homicides, suicides, accidental deaths, or any deaths in which the cause or mode of death cannot be determined, sudden or unusual deaths, or deaths from a contagious disease constituting a public health hazard. The list does capture a large portion of deaths within Los Angeles County, with about one-third of all deaths classified as coroner's cases. Of the approximately 60,000 deaths in Los Angeles County each year, about 18,000 become coroner's cases. Of these 18,000, only about 6,000, or one-third, will receive an autopsy, while the other 12,000 may only receive an investigation, or the coroner may waive their right to investigate the death completely. And the information we receive from the coroner's office on each of these 18,000 cases per year is very comprehensive, given our surveillance objectives. We obtain a 42-variable data set for each case, which includes demographic information, their place of residence, variables describing the circumstances of the death, information on who reported the death and when, and most importantly, an investigator's description of the death scene. Eventually, we do obtain the causes of death, but that's not apparent immediately. This data comes to us from the coroner's office in the daily file on a daily basis, and it includes all cases from the previous day. These files are immediately uploaded into our coroner case database in Access. We review this file and identify cases of interest to us for follow-up in two ways. The first approach, and most time intensive, is to have two public health nurses, the coroner's liaison public health nurse, funded by the CDC cooperative agreement, and her supervisor, review the entire file, selecting out cases for follow-up. The second approach is to import the file in the statistical software package SAS and search for specific strings of characters within the death event description fields. I'll go into more detail about that in a minute. The cases which are selected are printed in a report, and this report is then also manually reviewed by the same public health nurses, but in addition, that report is reviewed by myself and two additional physicians in the office. Each reviewer indicates which cases warrant follow-up, and they're added to the earlier automated SAS algorithm selections. These follow-up cases and subsequent information obtained on them are stored in the main Access Coroner database. In addition to the daily file, we receive a weekly file from the coroner's office containing all cases opened at the coroner's office in the previous week. This file is used to update the cases we've selected for follow-up in the previous week. We're looking specifically for any final causes of death obtained by the coroner's office and whether they indicate an infectious disease-related death event. We also receive a monthly file, don't worry, it's the last one, from the coroner's office once per month containing all cases opened in the coroner's office in the last 6 months. This file is used exactly as the weekly file to update the follow-up cases, but we also use it to update all other cases in the coroner's database. Many coroner's cases take much longer than a week or a month to close, and experience has shown us that 6 months is adequate to provide final causes of death information for most, not all, but most coroner's cases. So I'll show you now a little bit more about the algorithm we use to select cases for follow-up. The program searches for character strings, some of which are listed here, and classifies any cases found to contain these strings of characters into one of these seven syndrome categories. Each case can have up to two syndrome classifications. Our efforts to continue fine-tuning the algorithm are ongoing, but a few lessons we have learned can be seen here. For instance, many investigators completing a description of the death will use abbreviations or medical terminology such as SOB for shortness of breath, so we've included those. There are frequent spelling errors. For some reason, the word diarrhea gives people problems, so we include multiple spellings for diarrhea. We've had to create exclusionary rules, so when we're looking for the word temp for temperature, we don't want to get every listing of attempted suicide or attempted murder, so we ask the program to remove attempt with no other listing of temp. And with heightened attention on large international airports as entry points for infectious diseases, such as avian influenza, we've added searches associated with the Los Angeles International Airport. Once we've identified cases for follow-up, we can either do active or passive follow-up. Active follow-up is reserved only for those cases which look particularly suspicious and require immediate attention from our team. Examples of these include any deaths on a plane or any cases in which the description mentions any agents of bioterrorism or any mandatorily reportable disease. We notify the appropriate public health program and also check with Los Angeles County's electronic infectious disease report database to determine if the disease event has already been reported. We then contact the coroner's office directly to determine if an investigation and autopsy have been ordered or are underway. Sometimes we've been able to suggest possible infectious agents to the coroner's office and influencing the testing that they decide to perform, but we've also been able to alert the coroner's office to potentially hazardous bodies, which would require special precautions. That was fun. We may also choose to contact the previous provider or hospital of death for additional information. Passive follow-up is much less intensive, and we can't do active follow-up on all how many thousands of cases we get. So this is what we use on most of the coroner's cases we follow up. Here we simply wait for the final cause of death to be sent to us in either the weekly or monthly updates, and we then forward the case findings on to the appropriate public health program for additional follow-up and, if necessary, a standard investigation. So this diagram is going to show the numbers of coroner cases we've had at each step in the process from 2003 to 2006. In these 4 years, the coroner's office has sent us a whopping 70,774 cases, or about 18,000 cases a year. The SAS algorithm generated reports with a total of 4,489 cases, and upon visual inspection of these cases, we selected 346 for follow-up. Only an additional 78 cases were selected for visual or for follow-up on visual inspection alone, which gave us a total of 424 follow-up cases. When we looked at the final causes of death supplied by the coroner's office, 196 of these 424 follow-up cases had a communicable disease cause of death, and mind you, this is over 4 years. When we ran our SAS algorithm on all the final causes of death supplied by the coroner's office monthly files, we found an additional 522 cases we missed on the initial inspections with communicable disease causes of death for a total of 718 such deaths. 505 of these were reportable, and surprisingly, 281 had not been previously reported to us. So to summarize, 424, or about 0.6% of all coroner's cases, were selected for follow-up. 46% of these 424 follow-up cases had a reportable disease cause of death, and 56% of cases with a reportable disease cause of death had not previously been reported. So this is a table of the 281 cases which had not been previously reported to us, and it shows the infectious disease listed as the final cause of death. For the most part, you can see we get quite a few hepatitis cases, which we don't do much follow-up on unless they're acute. Most times people have a history of hepatitis. But we have had some very interesting investigations surrounding meningitis cases in incarcerated individuals. We've had cerebral cysticercosis deaths and even a rabies case, which we were notified of shortly after the coroner's report by a hospital physician. This system, though, has been able to give us a 24-hour head start on several possible avian influenza cases at LAX, which would be good, and will continue to play a larger role in the reporting of severe MSSA and MRSA cases as our state reporting requirements around those two infections change. There are a few limitations to the system. We can only review those deaths which become coroner's cases each year, so we do miss almost two-thirds of all Los Angeles County deaths. But we hope that within the several broad categories of definition of coroner's cases, we capture as many unusual deaths as possible. And we also rely completely on the coroner's investigators' initial descriptions of the decedent and the circumstances of the death. So these descriptions can be lacking in completeness, in useful information for our purposes, and in accuracy. And as I already mentioned, they can be riddled with spelling errors, which poses problems for our SAS algorithm. And additionally, the timeliness of the passive follow-up system does depend on the speed of the coroner's office in investigating a case and assigning final causes of death. And we do have several cases which do not have a final cause of death assigned well after 6 months. So that adds a long lag time. Future steps for us in this system include utilizing retrospective knowledge of an unfortunate public health infectious disease event to establish the sensitivity and specificity of the algorithm. But we've looked, in the absence of such an event, into things like heat-related deaths during our hot months of the year or any fire-related deaths. Also currently in progress is a more data-driven analysis using the demographic variables in the coroner's report to analyze actual infectious disease-related death trends in Los Angeles County. And finally, now that we have access to our electronic death record system, we'll also be excited to begin comparing the causes of death listed in the coroner's report with those in the death records. I wanted to say a quick thank you to Dr. Mascola and Dassey, who continue to support our program, the other members of my team, Sharon Sakamoto, Kim Bryant, Don Tereshita, and Amber Zelenay, and finally the Los Angeles County Department of the Coroner, who continues to pick up the phone when I call and ask for more data. Any questions, please? No, I believe in Van No, actually sitting right here. She does meningitis for our county. They're supposed to call us within 24 hours. Any report? Yeah, so Van was saying only if it's identified meningococcal, then they're required to call us within 24 hours. She is saying that most of the meningitis cases that I forward her way to follow up on end up being kind of an unspecified meningitis. But that brings up an interesting point, which is when I presented this information to our coroner's office, they said, wait, what do you mean? We have to report to you? We figured the hospital where they died would report to you. So there has been a lot of relationship building along with this project in assisting the coroner's office with reporting of infectious diseases and the resources that are available to them within the public health department, especially at the public health lab. So, yes. Well, we would have to do something like looking into the event description fields to see if there was any mention of residents in a foster care facility or residents in a foster care home. Initially, we'd probably subset out people of a certain age. But I very rarely see foster home children a foster home listed in those death event description fields, so it would probably have to be a collaboration between the actual coroner's investigators who do go to the scene, asking them if they do go to any child death scenes to ask for history of foster care residents.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Rowland with the Canadian Department of National Defense. I'm just wondering whether you've done anything just with sheer numbers as opposed to looking at the cases in details, or just, you know, good old-fashioned syndromic surveillance where you're looking at volumes?
Yeah, actually, we have in Los Angeles County a very robust syndromic surveillance program funded by a lot of the bioterrorism grants, and they do the more standard emergency department syndromic surveillance, but they also take this data set every day and run it through their syndromic surveillance program and algorithms. So they're looking for any increases in any of the syndromic categories as well. So, but that's a whole nother presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Our next presenter is Curtis Crocker, and he